This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Tuesday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And it is election day. Not here. Not in Oregon. Not. It's election day in California. And the other one I'm watching is Iowa.
Yeah, those are two states that are going to tell a giant story.
Oh, yeah.
And I sit here and I go, and I know, I can almost like predict the way the news is going to cover it based on outcomes. If Iowa doesn't vote strong red, they are going to be celebrating that Trump's policy has destroyed the Republican Party and the Democrats are going to be taking control here in November and this and that.
And then, yeah, well, and we'll get to California in a second, just because we don't want to spend too much time on Iowa, just that I know a lot of people in Iowa and a lot of them are Democrats, because I was looking at Steve Dace actually broadcast. He's with The Blaze, of course, the Steve Dace show, and he lives in Des Moines. And so what's happening is they have a primary going on right now, and they've got two pretty strong Democrats. One's kind of your average flaming weirdo, which is pretty much what all the prog commies put up all the time to run for the left. One dude is not, though. One guy is actually campaigning really strongly and actually rather sane. So it's like, it'll be interesting to see which one of these two candidates get it. Because you and I were talking, Hunter, before we came on today. It's really easy to be a Democrat in a red state. Life is pretty good for you because you're in a red state. So you can you have the luxury of going, aw, for whatever, you know, issues you see. We need to, you know, we need more government money for this group. Meanwhile, you can go out and help that group yourself. And I know a lot of people who do. But it's a different dynamic when you're a blue voter in a red state versus being a red voter in a blue state. Completely different world. So I'm going to be following that one, because whoever wins the primary, that changes the whole dynamic coming into the general election. Because the same guy is harder to beat. And he's actually giving people something to vote for, not voting against. Because all the D's have right now is, we hate Trump. That's all they have.
Oh, yeah. That is the biggest talking point, especially in blue states.
Yep.
And like you were saying, if you are a blue voter in a red state, one, that game's not going to work. So, you know, campaigning against Trump when you're running for a local or even statewide office isn't going to work in a red state.
Right.
One. Number two, it's so easy to sit there and go, you know, gas prices are lower, food prices are lower, I have more money in my pocket, their taxes are lower. So
there's,
you know,
no poop on the streets.
So somebody needs some help. But, you know, whether it's an LGBTQ or whether it's a homeless problem or whatever the scenario is, well, they just need more help. So let's vote for the blue guy because he cares. He cares about the boys that feel like girls. He cares about the homeless drug addict, you know, that is wandering in the streets. You know, because there's only one or two. There's not, you know, a whole town of them, you know, in a public park.
Like freaking, it's cold. And it's cold in Iowa. In the
well,
and
that's the thing.
Really cold.
It's so easy to sit there and go, I want this. And you don't, when you go to the polls and you have that mentality, or even if you want to stand out on a freeway overpass and state your opinion, the people on the other side aren't coming out to attack you.
Exactly.
And tear you down and yell at you and scream at you and threaten you physically. They are just letting you do your thing. Which is why being cognizant of blue voters in red states, the reds need to make sure they're out to vote.
Exactly. And as far as I'm concerned, red states need to be as hostile to blue voters as possible, because everybody is, there's a big, the giant sucking sound. Because I saw an article today, forget the number, it was like 80,000 or something have left Oregon over the past 5 years. I mean, there's been wave after wave after wave. And a lot of the red states are like, yeah, okay, but don't bring your stupid voting records over here. Don't bring your ridiculous progressive crappery over here and change it. So a lot of red states are fortifying to be inhospitable. And that's kind of what you need to do. Like in a state like Iowa, I think there's a $200,000 voter discrepancy where there's more Republicans. But again, how many times do we see how apathetic voters are, especially in red states where they think, oh, we're safe. No, you're not.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just sit here and go, maybe what red states need to do is start, you know, so for those senior trips and those other things, start sending people to Seattle or start sending them to Portland or San Francisco or Oakland. You know, let them see what progressive policies really mean to a city rather than send them to some luxurious place, you know, where they get to wine and dine and relax and, you know, see the sights. Send them somewhere where there used to be a population that had a lot of tourism, and that tourism has gone down the toilet because of these policies.
Yeah, yeah. Get out of like the touristy spots that tend to get cleaned up for people coming in, and you need to get into some of the side streets. Which brings me to the California. So you got a gubernatorial primary. We talked a little bit about that. A lot of calls for Chad Bianco to drop out because the numbering is just not mathing there. And he really needs, he's not going to do it. I mean, these people with the hubris, it's like, do you care more about your state or your campaign? Because, dude, you're kind of the bad guy here a little bit, because it looks like Hilton really may have a shot. Again, it's a ranked choice voting jungle primary. It'd be great if Hilton could pull it off. What is it, 50% plus one? And then, of course, the race that everybody's watching is Spencer Pratt. Mm-hmm. I wish I could vote for Spencer Pratt. No idea who he was before all this, but I'm like, yeah. Oh, I love the guy.
No, I had never once knew he was a reality star until after he started this campaign and drew national attention because of how well it is being run. And I'm sitting here going, this is one where either if Spencer Pratt were to pull this off for the mayor of Los Angeles,
oh my gosh,
the news stories will be so wonderful because they'll sit there and say, Spencer Pratt won, and then just let it go. They won't want to say another word about it because guess what? It doesn't benefit the leftist media if the biggest city on the West Coast and besides New York and the whole nation goes red at this point in time.
Even if it just goes pink, I mean, I don't think he's running. I mean, it's a nonpartisan race. I saw him on Gutfeld the other night, and he's not running it as a partisan. He's running it. I love it. It's the open your eyes, use your eyes and look around. And he's been going into neighborhoods that other politicians are scared to go into because there's a lot of people that are just, they're angry. And they're angry at the status quo. And I did see another ad because his ads, every time I'm on X and it's like, ooh, there's a new one. This one is to Scrooge, an L.A. Carol. Mm-hmm. And have you watched it?
I did watch it. It's
fantastic.
Yeah. And I just sit here and go and just, I hope and I pray that he is overwhelmingly successful. I want to see him run away with this thing simply on the fact that he has run such a amazing campaign to get national eyes on a mayoral race, even in Los Angeles. And I go, and then hopefully everyone else across the nation, especially on the conservative side of things, starts to look and go, okay, this works. Let's do this.
This is the blueprint. Mm-hmm. This is the blueprint. Exactly. Exactly. And it takes a certain personality type. And I think his TV background and just sort of having a fearless, bombastic personality does him well. Not everybody. I can't see necessarily Christine Drazen taking on that. Mm-mm. It's just not her personality, but surrogates could.
But yeah, well, and yeah, realistically, using new and kind of exciting and entertaining ways to just point out things.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, really for the Drazen camp, what if she were to put out a little video that shows what Oregon would be like if we had the gas tax, if we had, you know, all these other taxes and all these things that, you know, in her primary ad, she was saying we would have so much more if I hadn't been there to fight against it. Well, go ahead. Let's AI this thing. Let's put all of those things into play and show us what Oregon would look like if Tina Kotek had her way 110%.
Yeah, an Oregon Carol.
Mm-hmm.
Show it. Show us what it would look like, because it was pretty damning to look at the parks and everything else like that. So, again, if you haven't seen that, definitely watch that. So those are the two that I'm going to be watching. Last poll I saw, he's up by 1 point over Bass. But then you're seeing a lot of man on the street, and you told me about this one. You know, who are you voting for and why? Well, I'm voting for Karen Bass because we're both black. Mm-hmm. Or I'm voting for Nithya Raman because we're both Indian. Mm-hmm. What? That's not why you vote for somebody.
Well, yeah. In this video,
are you okay when you look around? You're okay with this, and that's the reason you're going to vote for somebody?
Well, in the irony of the video you're referencing is, it's actually a man on the street. He asked an Indian man. He says, "You know, why? Who are you voting for?" You know, and he said the Indian woman, and he goes, "Well, why her instead of Karen Bass?" Well, he said, "Because she's Indian and I'm Indian." And he said, yeah. "Well, aren't you worried that all the white people will vote for Spencer Pratt just because he's white?" And he goes, "Well, people shouldn't vote because of skin color."
What? Huh? Unless it's me. Wow.
Yeah.
And then he probably said it with a straight face.
Oh, yeah.
No,
totally. No understanding that he literally just said, "I'm voting for this person because of their skin color, but you shouldn't vote for this guy because of his skin color." I'm just going, the detachment is what is so astounding to me, that you don't even realize that what you're doing is what you don't think other people should be doing.
It's literally, that is a perfect comment on the state of the country today. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go ahead and take our first break on this election day in California and Iowa. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Salem Clinic Urgent Care and Color Tile of Salem.
Well, let me be the first to wish you a happy nuclear family month.
Well, thank you.
We are celebrating.
Same to you.
Thank you. Thank you. It's also Veterans Awareness Month. So there's all kinds of stuff going on in this lovely month of June. It's you had your birthday in May. I'm a June Gemini, so that's coming up. Mm-hmm. I'm getting older, but that's good. Beats, the alternative.
That's right. You know, it's nice to, you know, kind of slowly transition into that next stage of life as the kids are getting older and, you know, the grandkids start to appear and all those fun things. We know the feeling.
Yes. Well, you know, like I mentioned, next week we're off for the week. I'm going to be in Cape Cod. So I wonder if they're celebrating Nuclear Family Month.
I sincerely doubt it.
I'll have to let you know.
There's these other celebrations that are occurring around the nation, particularly in deep blue cities are very much. Yes, and it's ironic because I haven't heard a whole lot about it, you know, as in years past.
Mm-hmm. No, neither have I.
And I remember going back, you know, 15 plus years ago, actually taking a family trip into Seattle, not realizing it was Pride Week at that point. And stepping onto a ferry boat to realize that this isn't the normal weekend crowd I would usually see.
Well, I'll take lots of pictures. I'll let you know. I'll report back from Blue Cape. Okay, I wanted to talk a little bit about, was it last week, I guess, about the Aurora Avenue neighborhood that put up the barricades.
Yep.
So they were having, and you kind of outlined it again, real quick, sketch that out for folks who aren't familiar with that.
So Aurora Avenue is one of the prostitution capitals of the world. Let's put it that way. There are prostitutes, both of age and underage, walking these streets 24 hours a day. There is literally turf wars between different pimps. There is almost nightly shootings, drive-by shootings, all sorts of violent behavior in that area. So this little neighborhood off of that strip, they put out some homemade planters, let's put it that way.
And they were rather nice. They were sort of shiny, corrugated metal, and they were filled with... They were heavy.
Yeah.
You couldn't push them out of the way.
Yeah.
And I anticipate they wanted to put flowers and things in there. Well, the city of Seattle said, oh, no, not so fast. First of all, this neighborhood hasn't always been that way. I'm assuming people wouldn't have bought property in there if it had always been that way.
No, and that's the thing is seeing reports from people that live in the neighborhood. It is virtually the lack of any police enforcement, any law enforcement in the area, just letting this whole scenario run amok to the point where one guy in the neighborhood said, you know, I heard, you know, a massive amount of gunshots, you know, right down, you know, outside my house. I called the police and they said, is it still happening? And he's like, well, not at the moment. They said, okay, we won't worry about it right now then. And then when he went out the next morning, he found at least 15 shell casings in the street right outside of his house.
So this is, I mean, a clear failure of the municipal government in the city of Seattle. Mm-hmm. Mayor Forehead is not protecting, her office isn't protecting these people. So, I mean, at what point are the neighborhoods that say, you want me to take it down? No, I'm not going to do it. You're going to have to make me do it.
Well,
which they probably will. They probably bring down the heavy hammer.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, the irony of all of this is that they literally blocked off access into this neighborhood from Aurora. There's still plenty of access into the neighborhood. And are being told to take it down, and I'm sure they will send in vehicles to move these things out of the way if they don't do it themselves. But you go back, 5 years ago, and they literally, when a whole area of Seattle blocked itself off, allowed no access, and just pretty much became utter chaos, a.k.a. Chaz, Chop, whatever you want to call it, it was celebrated by the city of Seattle and the government.
Remember? It was the summer of love. Oh, I remember.
Yeah, when they took over a police station.
And there were really big bonfires where they were just roasting marshmallows. It was so sweet. Lots of music. Remember the little garden they tried to do on the tarp in the middle of the street?
Well, I'm sure that that wasn't really edibles until you cooked it into the brownies or the cookies. Let's put it that way for that garden.
Well, I and my other comment, I don't know anybody who lives in that neighborhood. I'm hoping maybe they've learned now that maybe voting has consequences. Hopefully, I wonder if they voted for this chick. I don't know if they did or not, but I would hate to live like that. I would not want to be hearing gunshots constantly. It would be a horrible way to live. And of course, you can't sell your property.
No,
you miss the window there, people, because you're not going to be able to sell it now.
No, you, at that point, you hope that you're renting in that neighborhood and you can pack your bags and break your lease. I mean, that's, yeah, this is America. This is a major city in the United States of America. This is not a third world country where the gangs and the drugs and the prostitution run things. But yet, this is the reality of living in certain parts of blue cities today.
Well, and blue states, but let's now, still in Washington state, I saw this story today, and I literally tweeted out, bravo. This is the city of Battleground, Washington. Little smaller city. They signed a proclamation officially recognizing the federal government's designation of Antifa as a terrorist organization. And so, of course, there were a couple of miscreant Antifa members there to interrupt the mayor, resulting in their removal and address and arrest, rather. And I'm sorry, I laughed out loud. This chick was screaming and crying. It's like, hey, those are the consequences, girl.
Yeah, well, and you, if you listen to what she literally does, one, she's cursing at the council as they're even talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
And then they asked her to be removed, so the police remove her, and then she's cursing at the police and telling them that she has rights and she can say whatever she wants and she can behave. And then when they put the arms behind the back to handcuff her, then she's screaming how they're violating her civil rights and she's the victim and all of this. And I just go, and there's the problem. We have literally taught a generation of people that no matter how they behave, they are always the victim.
Yeah, and they're shocked when real-world consequences come raining down their head. And I literally love that they showed up to prove exactly the point and why this proclamation is needed. So again, you know, knowing a lot about small city government and how, you know, you see what happens to the mayors and councils that aren't in you know, lockstep with Antifa or the activist groups. It takes guts to do this. So again, I say bravo to this mayor and this council. And I would like to see this courage be contagious and start knocking these people out. I mean, they have no knocking them out of the conversation. They don't know anything.
Nope.
They're useful idiots. They get told what to chant, what to bring. They get their little supplies, their water bottles, their drums, their little bullhorns, and they're out there just to sow the seeds of chaos. That's it. That's all they are good for.
And they're
good for that on that side. For the rest of the world, everybody hates them.
Well, and that's the thing is they are all over the place, and they all look the same. They all have, you know, hats on or beanies, and then they have masks on, and then they're dressed all in black. And sometimes they're carrying a flag, and sometimes, and I'm going, we're seeing this at every level, every city across the place. And you just hope that a place like Battleground, Washington can be the place where you see that courage, and maybe it's contagious, and other small towns in Washington state, in Oregon, will literally take the same stance and say, we're sick and tired of you disrupting and causing chaos and being allowed to continue to do that, because there's a level of decorum that needs to occur.
Exactly. And it does, you've got to get over having them call you names. Who gives two rips what these people think about you?
Mm-hmm.
Who cares? They're clearly in the wrong. And like I said, nobody else likes them. They disrupt life. I still remember that woman from Portland, I mean, who was out yelling and screaming at them and how she was treated by the city and all the people that have to live there. That's where my heart goes out to. Those are the ones I want to see supported. So again, bravo to the city of Battleground. I don't know whether there's, you know, chutzpah to go around in the smaller cities. I sure hope so, though.
Well, I mean, you could always go right back to Seattle to see the polar opposite, where, you know, they are preparing for FIFA. There's some soccer coming to town, Seattle, major stuff. Story coming out this morning. They bought four, you know, state-of-the-art toilets, portable toilets to put out for in preparation for FIFA at a cost to the city of $456,000.
And guess how long they lasted before they were vandalized?
Not too long, because I've heard they've already been vandalized.
Yep. And I think, they think they're so cheeky. The ribbon cutting was, it looked like toilet paper to me.
Mm-hmm. It probably was.
Oh, uh-huh.
Well, if you're going down the toilet, you might as well get the paper for it.
And of course, I mean, we've been seeing videos coming out of Paris and absolutely disgusting what's happening in Paris again for winning. I'm not a soccer fan.
Mm-hmm.
I remember hearing about all the hooligans and everything in Europe, and the hooligans are running amok. Be interesting to see what the hooligans do. in Seattle.
I'll tell you, if you actually go and pay attention, you know, we always talk about, you know, the Super Bowl champion cities.
Yep.
There always seems to be bad behavior in the aftermath, and in World Series and NBA Finals, you know, there's always, you know, bad behavior happening, and there's always going to be bad behavior. But if you actually go and you look at soccer matches over the year, losing teams because of a call or something that doesn't go their way, they literally will riot on the soccer field. I mean, it is the violence and the craziness worldwide when you look at wins and losses when it comes to this level of soccer is amazing. And I go, and Seattle is so ripe for the pickings if something were to go down out there.
And I have to be in Seattle a week after all of this. So it'll be interesting to see what the outcome is. But watching the videos coming out of Paris, I was in Paris in 2018. And it was right before the Gilets Jaunes, the Yellow Vest riot started. And it was still kind of, I felt safe there.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't go into the Champs-Élysées has been rioted. The Eiffel Tower, I mean, it's a completely unrecognizable city. And it's absolutely a shame. And it really feels like it's fallen.
Yep.
And again, soccer is boring. How do you get all riled up about that game? Whatever.
Well, I mean, obviously, internationally, people live and die with this thing quite literally. It is a big event. It is going to bring a ton of money into the city and a lot of tourism.
Yeah.
But now you have to deal with the behavior both locally when it comes to, you know, bathroom vandalism, as well as celebration or anger over a loss. So we'll see.
Well, if the toilets are any bellwether, yeah, we'll see. All right, we're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Come on back.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. And again, happy Nuclear Family Month. I love this month.
Well, I should also mention, you know, speaking of Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home, I went into downtown earlier today, had to drive through there, and saw the potted plants and pointed them out, and they look gorgeous and so inviting. My daughter actually works in the downtown area, so I was dropping her off at work, and she was excited when there was one outside of her work.
So. Oh, nice. They're so beautiful. And we talked with TJ and Tom Phone yesterday about all the cool stuff that's going on and the beautification. It's those little things. It's like on the other side when we talk about New York City all the time with the broken windows and how Giuliani, if you focus on those little things, it really does set a tone. It's so wonderful. Now, unfortunately, just a few miles up the road, a new survey, and Fox 12 is reporting this. So, Portland ranks near the bottom of North American cities in a new downtown perception survey. I have to say, caveat, all honesty, I haven't been to downtown Portland. I don't even remember the last time I was in downtown Portland. I just have no interest in going.
I think it was probably 10 plus years ago for
me. Yeah, at least for me too.
Mm-hmm.
So Portland's downtown is viewed less favorably than every major North American city in several key categories. And this is a survey that underscores the city's continuing struggle. I watch a lot of, you know, YouTube videos and stuff like that. I'll get bored and I'll kind of like rabbit hole. And there have been a lot, you know, talking about, you know, why did it happen? And you can kind of look at the progression over the years and policy choices and decisions that were made to how where it got now that it is the bottom ranked.
Mm-hmm.
Well, only 3% agreed that it's beautiful, and it was one of the most beautiful. It was a treasure.
Well, and that's the thing is you have a city council that wants no police, no accountability, let people do whatever they want to do. We legalize drugs in the state, which, of course, as the biggest city in the state of Oregon, you knew it was going to attract a whole wave of drug addiction into it. And then, you know, then not dealing with the repercussions of that, businesses walked away. It's at least 30-35% vacant in downtown. And now we add in the new wrinkle of, you know, every effort to rejuvenate the Moda Center to keep the Blazers in town, and city council is not interested in that. Granted, if you actually were to ask any of these members of the council, I'm sure they would have plenty of reasons that it's not their fault.
Correct. Well, this is what you get with progressive governance.
Mm-hmm.
Pure and simple. What is the Peacock Progressive Caucus?
Yep.
Yeah. They're not hiding it. So you vote for progressive, this is what you're going to get. And unfortunately, Salem just did that.
Yeah,
so,
well, it's the mentality that okay, there's a homeless problem down there. Well, if we just put more money into building housing and, you know, putting out portable toilets for $465,000 or $456,000, then all of these problems would go away miraculously. It's like you give money to a drug addict, they're not going to use that for food and shelter. They're going to use it for drugs. I think that's a cycle that is proven, and yet there's a belief that just doesn't occur.
Nope. I think everybody knows it does. They believe it. Mm-hmm. Progressives, they're not stupid. They know what's going on. So this must be by design. It's what they want. Mm-hmm. Because throwing money at it, and there's never any, we'll have a blue ribbon task force. Let's have four of them. That'll solve the problem. We'll just keep talking about it. And we'll just, you know, we'll keep meeting and we'll keep talking about it. Meanwhile, the problem gets worse and worse. And then you've got low vibrancy and walkability scores. Tied with St. Louis. Have you been to St. Louis? I have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not great.
Mm-mm. Well, and that's the thing to me. I sit here and go, the irony of all of this is when there's a Chinese dignitary coming to Portland, they mm-hmm. manage to clean up the streets. When they have a Sunday market, they do this every week because they have a farmer's market
on the waterfront, downtown.
So during the week, it is a drug den and a homeless shelter, and they literally move all of those people out so they can bring in vendors for the weekend, move the vendors back out Sunday night, and let the homeless literally take it over for the week. They do this routinely. This is a weekly scenario that is a cycle. So they have the ability to clean it up. They just don't want a permanent solution to anything.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly right. And again, like we talked about, this is all choices. This is all policies. This is people. I mean, remember the video, the two of the newer ones, and they're just like, they're gabbing and they're like gossiping behind their computer screens and they're eating pizza. These are not serious people, but they're destructive people. And again, if Portlanders keep voting this in and voting this ideology, and you're just going to get more of this, this is a black eye. This is embarrassing.
Well, it's a black
eye
for
one of the most
state.
Beautiful. Yeah. Yes, exactly. As goes Portland, so goes Oregon.
Well, and that's the thing is we know businesses are fleeing left and right. I think we're down to only like 3 billionaires left in the state of Oregon. You know, money is leaving. Businesses are leaving. And it is that death cycle that just leads to more deterioration, more overcrowded homeless problems, more drug addiction. And you just see them circling it. And you know, maybe Portland's biggest problem is they went to this ranked choice voting. They went to paying exorbitant amount of money to these city council members. And now this is a career for these people. So, yeah, I'm not surprised one bit when they're sitting behind their computer screens, eating pizza and gossiping. Maybe probably playing on their phones while people are trying to tell them their problems because they don't care anymore.
Right. And don't be surprised if you see that floated again. It was floated under former Ward 2 Councillor Tom Anderson, who now represents HD 19, to pay councillors. Mm-hmm. And it was shot down. These have always been volunteer positions. You change the dynamic when you have a salary tied to it. One of the other things, this is a story somebody sent me. It was 88,000 Oregonians have moved to another state. That is highest earners. People who can move, that is entrepreneurs, that are people that are tired of being regulated within an inch of their lives, taxed within an inch. Retirees maybe necessarily don't affect that as much, but when you've got young families moving out, when you just look at the education scores in Oregon, you've got a lot of young families going, oh, my kid going to these schools. I don't feel safe in these cities.
Well, you say, look at Portland and that trickle down to the rest of Oregon. We'll go to Wayback Machine because a week or two ago we found a tweet where they had mentioned that the under 5 population of Oregon is down 29% since 2005. Yep. That's why they're currently closing schools up in Portland because people with young children aren't moving there and in fact are moving out of there or not having children.
I did see, and I forgive me for not having the details on this. It ties into that because it was like the lowest ranked schools, and I forget the metric that they use, but three of them from Salem were in the top.
Oh yeah, I'm
like it was Walker, it was Crossler, and then there was another one, and they were there, like right up there. Medford and Roseburg weren't looking so great either. I'll have to find that. But we've talked about Salem Kaiser Public Schools. It's been on this downward spiral for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, and here's the trick is. You know, we talk about, you know, the death spiral of Oregon. Well, look at the death spiral of our school systems. Kids are either moving out of the area or not attending public school, which then cuts into the funding, which then the school comes back to the taxpayer, says we need more money. Right. Well, why do you need more money? You have less kids to deal with.
Right.
And their response is, well, we'll just cut more teachers and keep our high paid executive spots. I think there's like 65 people that make, you know, six figures or more within our school district.
Yeah, it's very bloated.
We need all this, you know, money to keep operating and educating kids. You're not educating kids to begin with. So
no, you're indoctrinating them, and you're, and then they're also not safe in there. And we've heard the horror stories about that. One of the other things too, it's sort of another ramification of this, is Oregon is poised to lose that sixth congressional seat that they got in the last census. When you have that kind of population outflow, and more people are dying than they are being born in the state, so it looks like this, Oregon will lose a congressional seat. California's going to lose four.
Mm-hmm.
And then Idaho, Utah, and Arizona will pick up two seats each. Those are red states. Utah's a little iffy now. Idaho's got some issues. Arizona, the same thing. So there is no real safe, you're not super safe, but the blue states are hemorrhaging population.
Well, yeah, and you can tell the fact that, you know, here along the West Coast, you know, and that's not even counting Washington, there's five seats right there, and you just go directly to the east, and all of a sudden you're gaining seats in all those states. And whether they're political refugees, financial refugees, whatever the purpose, now it's time to be more vigilant if you're in that second line that's formerly very red has now got to go, okay, we got to kind of batten down the hatches, because like we said earlier, it's very easy to vote blue in a red state compared to voting red in a blue state.
I muted myself. Sorry.
It's okay. Yeah, well, you know, you got a lot of choice language, I guess, you know.
When I know,
you see,
right,
how bad
probably just as well. I was dropped. No, I wasn't. I never do that. Never. I have the cleanest little mouth here. Yeah, it is very easy to vote blue when you're in a red state. And it's interesting to see the dynamic, because a lot of times what you'll find in red states is Democrats will just cloak themselves as Republicans and do a snow job. They'll lie, frankly. Mm-hmm. That's what happens. And they'll get in, and then all of a sudden. And so you see that. And there is a concerted effort across, because I'm sorry, the progressive left, communist Marxists never rest. And unfortunately, conservatives and Republicans tend to think, okay, we won this one, and now I'm going to go back to doing whatever. You've got to be vigilant. Again, it's in the name progressive. They've been at this for a very, very long time. They're good with incrementally moving things down the field. Sure. Republicans want utopia right now, and you can't have it. So you've got to be incremental, and you've got to be strategic in your thinking. So that's what I'm hoping for Oregon in coming up in November. That unity message that we talked about yesterday needs to stay strong and focused and very forceful and very, very solid going all the way through. Mm-hmm. You got a shot.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is, you know, we all need to recognize that the best case scenario in November's election is going to be, mm-hmm, we end up with a Republican governor and we break, mm-hmm, the supermajority.
Yep.
That is the best case scenario, which now puts things at a stalemate to moving slightly right, instead of continuously moving extremely left.
So go gridlock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, if you've ever driven in other states behind Oregon and Washington and California, you know that, you know, you don't have to deal with gridlock all the time. But this is that one situation where I'm going, give me the gridlock.
You know, this is a good gridlock. This is good. Nothing can happen. No, yeah, you always feel like when the legislature goes into session, you know, Katie, bar the door. Hide the pot of money. Hide it under the bed. Don't let them get to it. So
yeah, I don't want to dread legislative sessions. I don't want to know what fresh hell we're going to wake up to each and every day, and how they're going to, you know, tell us this is for the best of everybody, when you realize that, you know, if that happens, I'm going to be as broke as a joke. I don't want that. I want to go, you know, it's going to be relatively calm. Only real important things are going to even come close to the governor's desk, and we can enjoy a little peace and quiet. There's your time to relax.
And if it's a little crazy, she's got veto power. Mm-hmm. Hey. All right, let's go ahead and take our last break. Little update on, speaking of crazy, IP28. Oy vey, people. Okay, we're going to take that break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Cozy's New York Deli.
And there it is. All right. I had my finger because I'm hungry.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of hungry, PETA, people for eating tasty animals.
If that was the real acronym, I would so join.
Well, remember back in the day, I was one of those people. Okay, this is IP28 update. Coin News, this is as of yesterday. It's gained momentum. The petition to ban hunting and fishing in Oregon gains momentum with 125,000 signatures. So 5,000 more people signed this thing.
See, and I have so many challenges with this because even the news is presenting it as, you know, the ban hunting and fishing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to sit here and go, this will become, oh, look at the poor salmon. They're an endangered species. We need to just keep people out from fishing. And look at the poor animals. You know, hunting is so barbaric, and they'll put out all sorts of, you know, talk
Bambi.
About how, you know, well, that's going to be the poster child.
Gosh, yes.
You know, and I'm just sitting here going, the way this is going to be presented is going to literally make people just think that this is in. And I go, the reason I think this has a shot in the, you know, in the dark room of working for them is simply because so many people in the Portland area and this and that are not hunters or not fishermen, are literally, they think they're the ones that literally go to the grocery store and go, why would someone need to slaughter, you know, go out and kill a deer when, you know, you got perfectly good meat right here on the store shelves?
Leave Bossy alone. It's like those dippy-doo animal rights activists that go and put like, this cow is named Chloe. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have Chloe on your dinner table. And I'm like, Chloe will be delicious. Gonna have her with a nice Chianti.
I always have fun, you know, when I go on the little, you know, it's like field trips or out to one of these farms. You get on the hay ride and you go out through mm-hmm. the cow pasture. And I joke to my wife, I'm like, that one looks tasty over there. And that one's pretty good looking. Kind of steak would I get from that one?
look, cows. It's like, filet mignon. There's a nice chuck roast. I am a meat eater. I love meat. Uh-huh. I was a vegetarian for a couple of years. I was miserable and obnoxious and not very healthy. You got to work really hard. You got to combine your proteins. The mustache can tell you about that. Anyway, I am on the other side. I mean, the governor came out against this. I think she's doing a preemptive strike. I think they don't anticipate this passing. I think they're laying the groundwork. They'll bring it back again. They'll learn a lot from this, which is smart. Mm-hmm. Learn to see what works and what doesn't. And I was thinking, because what we're seeing with the Spencer Pratt campaign and the use of AI, which is really pretty cheap. Can you imagine the bunnies with the big eyes and the tears and the sadness and the scary guy with the gun, man, is in the forest. I mean, the possibilities are endless to tug on people that don't know a lot's emotional strings, people that will not look past this is about keeping animals safe from mean people.
Well, and see, here's my challenge thing is I'm sitting here looking at it. So the governor has already come out and said she's against it, which I believe 100% is a preemptive strike. Saying it now, it's going to be totally forgotten. And now she's taken herself out of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now she won't be referenced in the same sentence with her unless the, you know, pro eating animals crowd says something. Okay, so that's all out there. And then in this state, the simple fact that even this coin headline says petition to ban hunting and fishing in Oregon, which is probably worse than they could use, you know, because they could have put something like, you know, the petition to ban cruelty to animals instead. But depending on what the headline, if this thing hits our November ballots, is going to tell you a whole lot, because people vote like they read the news. They look at the headline and they don't go past it even a sentence.
Right. And like we talked about yesterday, that we have precedent for this in the state of Oregon. You had the spotted owl that was sort of deified. And of course, it was the barred owl that was taking out the spotted owl. It was basically a turf war. And then, of course, you had what happened with the cougars. It's kind of hard to make salmon cute, I guess, because you're going to see the furry little mammals. It's going to be a lot of mammals. You don't make insects cute. They're not cute. Maybe ladybugs. Okay. But you're going to see the furry little mammals trotted out. But then somebody brought up in the thread, too, good luck outlawing the Pendleton Roundup, Malala Buckaroo, Sisters in St. Paul Rodeos. My thought would be they learn something from this. They carve those out, because all this is about just controlling your life and controlling what you eat. They don't want you to eat meat.
Well,
period.
Over the years, I've had plenty of interviews with you know, people involved in rodeo. And they are a consistent target. See, I think they are hoping that this thing will do a 114 or a 110 or a 111, whatever, you know, pick your poison, and just kind of skirt through on simple lack of understanding by everybody. because these animal rights people would love to ban rodeos. They would love to shut these down because they don't see it as a sport and well taken care of animals. They see it as animals that are forced to suffer for our amusement.
And you can always find a video of somebody being an idiot and a jerk and cruel. You can always find those. They exist. There are people that are complete jerks out there and absolutely that are cruel. And that will, you'll see that on a loop. So again, well, I'm just measure 114. Come on.
Well, and you sit here and you go, you know, you brought up like Pendleton Roundup or the Sisters Rodeo and this and that.
Right.
I go, do you really think that our politicians and our progressives right now give a rat's patootie what a place like Pendleton or Sisters is going to vote? No, they are specks on the thing because they will easily be overpowered by uneducated, crazy voters up in Portland, in Eugene. Yeah. And their worry is the hunting community that is spread throughout the state, with the hope being that they're not paying enough attention. So they're going to try and keep this in wraps. And I can tell you right now, if the pro rodeo, the pro dairy, the pro eggs, the pro meat section of this state doesn't come out and figure out a way to put out some marketing that this is well beyond, you know, just treating cruel, you know, being cruel to animals, it is going to be very close, if not passing.
Okay, I'm gonna err on the side that it's too crazy even for Dopey D's that they're not gonna do it. You know, and then your average, you know, non-affiliated, the people that have sort of left, whatever. I think they're going to, we should take a bet. I don't know. Again, there's a lot at stake in this thing.
We'll check.
But again,
Calci,
and then I have to go back. I know, Calci, and I have to go back to 114, to measure 114, to measure 110. We all thought the same thing about those.
Yeah, well, and that's.
And so.
I will go back even farther than that. I will go back to when the state first legalized marijuana.
Yeah,
I will go back to when this state voted to incrementally increase the minimum wage year after year. I mean, I remember these conversations I had. It's like, well, you're not going to vote for that? I said no, because realistically today, maybe 5% of the public, high school kids working at a grocery store, you know, doing cleanup things, they're the ones making minimum wage. Everybody, the most normal people that are working a full-time job are making more. So all this will do is it will increase. If it goes up a dollar, my wage never went up a dollar. So I lost a dollar in spending power until, guess what? They bring me closer and closer to minimum wage. Why would I ever vote for that?
Yeah. Well, I never underestimate Multnomah County.
Mm-hmm.
Because
well,
Marion tends to be sane still. And, it's kind of purpley, though.
Never underestimate the kind of short attention span of the voters. I mean, that's the problem here. And I'm sitting there going, it's why we need the unity message. It's why we need to literally pound it out from now until November that we need something different in the state of Oregon. Period. Yep. End of story.
Yep. Yep. So it'll be interesting to see how this campaign plays out. I think, we should learn something from it as well. The sane conservative side should learn something for how they run this race. Because I think it was a pretty smart strategic move for Kotek to come out against it.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, is she's taken herself fully out of the conversation.
Yep.
She is going to distance herself from anything that is going to be controversial from now until November, hoping you forget about all the controversial things that she slammed down on us over the past year.
Don't forget, keep notes. Keep notes and remember all these things. All right, that's it for us today. We've got another great show, busy show for tomorrow. See you tomorrow.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.